Hi there. Today I'm here with Santosh Yadav. He is a software engineer from Hamburg, Germany. And he is also an MVP, a GitHub star, an NX champion, and what did I forget?
LGD.
Google Dev expert. Yes, that's right. Santosh, I'm very excited to talk to you. How is it going?
It's good. I'll be traveling soon, so glad we found the time to actually record this one.
Yeah, perfect. So for our listeners who don't know you yet, could you give us a brief introduction of you and your work?
Yeah, sure. So hey, everyone. This is Santosh here. I work as a staff engineer at Celonis, which is a German-based company in Munich. And apart from like my work, like where I mostly work on developer experience, so my work involves working on developer tooling and making sure our developers are actually unblocked, they can deliver faster, putting all the processes or building any tools. Apart from that, of course, I've been active in the community. So I've been AngularJD since 2019. And I try to contribute as much as possible in multiple ways. Like I write blogs, create videos, do podcasts. I mean, as well as we have a community called This Is Learning, which I have co-founded with one of my co-founder who lives in Denmark, called his name is Lars. And then I became a GitHub star back in 2020, which is a program from GitHub, similar to what Google Developer Expert program is, right? And I'm also an MVP, which is a Microsoft Evaluable Professional. This is what we call it. And a part of NX Champion because I use NX a lot at work. And in my career also, like I think after 2020, once I started using NX, I never looked back. I've been that most of the clients I have worked with, it's like, oh, NX, this is where we need. So that's about me. That's it.
So that means community plays a very important and crucial role for you and for your career. You have all these credentials and so what does that mean for you? What does community mean? Is it like hosting podcasts? Is it going to conferences? What does it mean for you personally?
It's a very interesting question because when I started, I had no idea about all this, right? So I just, to give you an idea, like I started my career back in 2009. So it was like, it's already 16 years. So I just completed my 16 years like last week. And I was like, wow, it's been so long. It's almost like, because I've worked in three different decades, almost. And till 2019, I had no idea about like all this. There is an open source thing and everything. Mm-hmm. So I just went, I started doing Angular back in 2017. When Angular was the Angular 2, right? I'm not talking about AngularJS, which many people still relates to. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. But Angular 2 came in, and I think it was Angular 4. When I started like looking into what this framework is, I started teaching it, got a job. And then around 2018, I thought like, oh, I have a job. Now let's start looking at the ways how I can contribute back. And that was the year I came across like GitHub. Like I went to the repository probably for the first time and see like what's happening, right? What's there? And I was like really, I thought like, why not to just go ahead and contribute on the repository on GitHub. And that was the idea. That's how everything came in. And 2019, I went to a conference, met someone from Angular team, and then came home, started contributing. So I had no idea about this JD program, NX Champion, nothing. So I just came home. I was like, I was just so motivated to give back to the community because it helped me a lot in my career. Like I wrote my entire journey. Mm-hmm. So, and then I was like, okay, let's do this. And once I started doing, I think this titles, or you may just call them a title, right? They're nothing more than that. So those titles just followed because people saw.
So by contributing, you mean like really to the Angular repository, like to the core of Angular?
So I started. So I started like contributing on Angular. I started with another project, which is an Angular community called NGRX. Which is a state management framework, basically. And then it gave me a little bit confidence, like I can do it. Mm-hmm. And then I started doing for Angular. I did like some of the documentation first. And then contributed to the Angular CLI because I was like always intrigued by what CLI is, like how this works. So I did some of the contributions there, and then I started writing blogs. I did like a lot of things in back in 2019 because I had so much time. And my work was, there was not enough to do. And my manager was like a very relaxed person. He was like, yeah, you can just manage your time. I don't have a lot of work for you. So I used to like just focus on this open source stuff and writing blogs. So eventually in 2019 itself, I think that was the year when I became AngularJD. So I started my career, started my like contributions around start of the year. And then by the end of the year, I was already an AngularJD. So I think this just followed. It's not something which I had to, which I saw and I want to become this, right? I want to become a GD or GitHub star. It just followed once I started contributing, and then people saw, okay, let's invite him to this program, right? So that's how it worked so far.
Yeah, that's super inspiring. And now there is this Hacktoberfest going on, like which is just like for encouraging people to contribute. It comes with its own problems, like a lot of spam PRs and stuff. Like, but there are like serious contributors to open source that are just maybe not know how to start. So what's your advice for them?
Yeah, I mean, this is a very good question because I stopped participating in Hacktoberfest after 2019. I think that was the first year I did it. And then from 2020, I think I started seeing this, what you can say, the army of influencers who just started like gamifying it, basically, just to make sure they get more followers, and then started talking shit and started spreading wrong information. Oh, this is how you get a free t-shirt. So that is crazy. But yeah, this is not the way. I mean, I know as soon as the 1st November happens, 90% of the so-called contributors, open source contributors, will just vanish from internet and they will be back next year. So that's a very wrong way to teach like how to contribute to open source. I think the first thing is you don't have to really contribute. You can just do your job and enjoy that and just be happy, right? If you are contributing to open source, just know like why you want to do it. Is your purpose learning something new, or is your purpose like maybe giving back to the community? If those are your goals, just go ahead and do it, right? I mean, no one is stopping you. It's like there are so many different repositories, there are so many different projects which always needs contributors. It's not like they want to gatekeep or something. If there is a project which doesn't accept contributors, they will let you know. They will update and read me that, okay, this is not a repository where you can contribute. But most of the projects which you use in your day-to-day project, just tell me like which one is not open for contribution. Most of them are. So if you're already working somewhere, I think generally I recommend like in two ways to contribute. For example, if you're a fresher, if you're never worked in industry, the first thing is, of course, you should pick up something to learn. Pick up some framework, technology, whatever you want. See your career in, right? It's not like people talk about React, so you should go ahead and start contributing to React. First, see like where your interest is, and then start exploring the projects, start learning, and then eventually you can start contributing to it. So it's a process. It takes time. It's not like you found a video explaining how to contribute to an open source and you start it from day one. That's not ideal. And then there are other set of people who already have experience, who have been working in industry, for example, like us, right? And we see, like, we write code on a day-to-day basis, and we use a lot of free projects, not free, but yeah, open source projects, right? Yeah. We already use it in our work. For them, it's probably less learning curve because they know the technology, they know the framework. What they can do is, of course, once you're going through your day-to-work, let's see what are the projects which I'm dependent on, and maybe just go ahead and see the GitHub repository and see if maybe you can just go ahead and help them. Simple example, let's say all the frameworks do upgrades, right? React 19 came in, Angular 20 came in. Why not? Like, just go ahead and update them, help them update their repository to the new whatever syntax or new features they have added. And that can be a good contribution to start with, because not a lot of people do that.
Yeah, So the base advice here is like to pick a repository of a software project that you're already familiar with, just to reduce the friction. And I guess the gatekeeping, you're right. So there are a lot of open source projects which happily would accept help. The problem is not that they don't. Often the problem is that they are not in that sense inviting, that they have a good onboarding process for the internal development and stuff like that. So what would be a way for an open source project to attract more people to contribute?
That's an interesting problem to solve, right? I mean, because, you know, I have seen the friction to actually contribute to an open source project have reduced a lot over the past few years. For example, if I see contributing to a repository back in 2019, it was a lot of work. You have to go ahead and clone the repository, fork it, so many steps. Now, thanks to, like, there are a lot of tools actually available from GitHub. For example, the best one I found was GitHub CodeSpaces, right?
Everyone gets, I love CodeSpaces. Yeah.
So CodeSpaces is like free for everyone, up to some limits for sure. I mean, you can just start your writing a code inside your browser, just start a new code space and then start contributing to the repository. Or there is also containers, right? Web containers, which you can also, some open source projects also have this web containers defined in their code spaces file, right, where you can define, okay, what are the instructions to start this repository. So as a contributor, as a maintainer, right, you can also make this things easier. So where there is a less learning curve or less friction when someone wants to start contributing, this code spaces thing improved. Or maybe you have seen this online VS Code, right, where you press a dot and then you can just start editing the file on the browser. It increased the contribution to documentation because it's easy. But code contribution is still tricky part, right? Because you have to make sure, like, you write everything, test everything, and then you push your code. Otherwise, probably your things will not work. And this is where the maintainers can be really encouraging, right? Of course, if you need help, let us know. This is how I started with NGRX. I mean, I had no freaking idea like how to do it, but when I started contributing, there were times, of course, I got stuck, like, and then I needed help, and then core team said, okay, yeah, why not, like, I can help you. And shout out to Tim and Brandon Roberts from NGRX core team. They were really helpful. I mean, they are like, as that's the reason I've whenever someone asks me, like, which projects to contribute, I always mention NGRX because they have been really helpful as well to the to anyone who contributes. Like, they are very encouraging, helpful. And you have to also be open that, okay, I should not be maybe blunt, because a lot of this open source contributors, I mean, they are also like not getting paid for it, right? They are just doing it out of the passion. So you have to be aware, like, what kind of help you want. You're not nagging them. If you have an open PR, of course, it's open. And if once they get time, they will try to help. So it's like give and take scenario, right? Of course, the maintainers who try to be very nice, they probably get burned out, because then there are other set of people who are trying to push them and get more out of it, right? So be respectful. I think this goes both ways. And this is how absolutely. You get attract more contributors, as well as for contributors also, right? They can be part of this project for a long time.
So there are a couple of things to unpack now. I think we should explain the code spaces thing more. It's a file. It's usually in .dev container. It contains basically all the instructions in a standardized way to set up a development environment. And once you press the open in code spaces button, then what happens?
Sure. Let's say once you go to GitHub, you have this option where you can say, okay, open in the code spaces. So what it does is it creates a virtual environment. And inside a VM, you will find, like, you can run different commands. You can also, like, it runs a VS Code basically, just in a container. So the advantage is, of course, you can install all the commands. You can run your test. You can run your, maybe if they have local serve, for example, for documentation, right? If they have something to serve, you can run those serve commands. which we generally won't be able to date on, like if you just use this github.dev, right, where you just press a command and because it doesn't allow you to run the commands. But with containers, like, and you can also choose the machines, because you know there are projects which doesn't work on 8 GB of RAM or maybe 16 GB of RAM. So you can choose like how much memory, how much RAM you want for this dev container to start with. So everything's configurable. You can just start with it, and you have your own working VS Code environment on cloud.
Yeah, and you don't need to install anything on your local machine. You could use it just right out of the browser. Yeah, wow, that's cool. But the other part is that you mentioned is like the interacting, the social part. And I think a lot of developers can relate to that. That is also like the exhausting part of like, it's like exhausting at work. It's like exhausting at open source projects. Sometimes it's hard to be nice, even if that goes both ways. Yeah, there is a lot of patience involved. How would you like to be approached as a maintainer? So, in terms of communication channels, in terms of side channels, other than pull requests, if I need help with something, how do I approach someone I think could be helpful to me?
The best way to start with is, of course, filing an issue, like, or if there is an issue, explaining it in much detail, like what you need, and if you are happy to contribute, like, because a lot of developers, what they do is they just open the issue, right? Oh, fix this, fix that. Of course, that's not the way, right? That's not the way to actually ask anyone. They are not like your slaves. Mm. So, of course, when you are opening an issue, try to explain as much as possible, all the steps, right? What you did, what you tried to do, what API you're trying to use, and what error you're getting. If you can, like, at the end, you're a developer, right, who is filing the issue. So you know what error you're getting. A lot of developers even don't think about even, right, giving the code, like, giving the error, like, what is the error? They will just say, okay, I tried using this. Mm. Doesn't work. Fix it. What?
Yeah. What thank you.
Exactly.
So be precise.
Yeah. So this is where you can have like a very detailed explanation, like what you tried and what you want to fix. And then StackBlitz, right? For example, StackBlitz, now a lot of open source projects allow you to actually give this StackBlitz reproduction. So you can create a reproduction, host it on StackBlitz, give them an example, help them reduce their work in debugging the issue. Most of the time, if you have this, there are chances that you will like get the response pretty fast. Mm-hmm. And if you are happy to contribute, the maintainers are also happy to like give you that help, because you already have walked, let's say, 90% of the path, because you were able to debug, you were able to figure out like which line is breaking, and you gave all this information back. And then you're saying, okay, I want to contribute as well. Now I want to fix it. So the maintenance will, of course, then take an effort to help you because you did all this.
Very cool. So community is one thing. The other thing is the day job. And I want to quickly ask you about like the company that you work for, because it's Celonis. It's not a company, probably it's not the most known company, but it is one of the few European successful startup stories. So can you tell us a little bit about your employer?
So I've been working with Celonis for more than 3 years now. So I started back in 2022 when I moved to Germany. This was my second job in Germany, basically. So one thing which I, of course, really liked about Celonis, because a lot of organizations are there which tells you not to like invest your time doing something else or not give you enough time to actually do something else. When I joined Celonis, I remember like it was August 2022. And then I, September or October of 2022, I got approached by NX. They were doing their first conference in US, and they asked me like, if you want to come as a speaker. And that was a big opportunity because I've been like talking about NX, writing about NX for a long, long time, and I don't want to miss it. And then I was like scared to approach my employer because I've just joined. Like, come on, it's been a month. Yeah. So I went back to my manager and said, hey, look, NX is doing this conference and you hired me for NX, right? I mean, you wanted me to do NX here. So Is it okay if I go to the conference? And they were like, yeah, I mean, we are more than happy to support you because this is one of the reasons we hired you, because we see like you have been active in the community. You're someone who can represent Celonis when you go on the stage. And I was like, oh, this is nice, because then it opened a lot of opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had like this talk with my managers saying, okay, I'll go to the conferences and I'll manage my work. And they said, yeah, that's absolutely fine. And unless we don't see someone complaining about your work, it's all good.
Mm-hmm.
So Celonis actually gave me this role where I can actually do my community part and also enjoy what I do at work, because I mostly work on developer productivity and experience, which I love. On the other side, I can go to conferences, speak at different meetups, travel, all while maintaining my work. So it was like a dream come true, I would say,
mm-hmm.
because not many companies do that. Like, they will not allow you to travel this much. I remember like I joined in August, and of course it takes some time to settle down, but I was traveling in September and October. So it was 2 months of full travel. I was just speaking at different conferences in different countries. There was a time I was not even aware where I was in, like last night. So, but yeah, it was exhausting, but it gives you that energy or boost as well, right? When your employer helps you, or they trust on you that, okay, I don't care where Santosh is, but I know like he will finish the job or finish the work. They don't interfere absolutely. Much. And they also give me like time to prepare my slides and everything, so I can manage my job, family, and travel. All
it's still exhausting, right?
Still is. So that's why this year I decided to take a break. So this year I was not traveling anywhere. There were no conferences planned. Nothing. I'm planning to come back next year. So I'll start traveling to conferences now from next year.
Yes. Very cool. And I think like from what I know about you, like this break was very intentional. You were very vocal about like the health issues that came along with that. Could you tell us what happened?
Yeah. So I remember like, so last year in 2024, so we just went for a normal health checkup, because I was like, oh, it's been 2 years and we haven't done any blood test or anything, so let's go for it. And then I got the surprising news from my doctor that I have symptoms of diabetes, and I was like, oh wow, really? So it took me some time to process it, basically, because I was shocked and I was in denial, of course, as well, that how can I,
like, the stages of shocking.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then of course I accepted it, of course, that this happened, like and then I realized that I had some symptoms which I was ignoring, like because, you know, with travel comes a lot of problem of your eating habits. You don't take enough rest. And 23, 24 was mostly traveling. I mean, I've been to so many countries. I was like, every month I was traveling. So it of course, it like took a toll on my health. So yeah. I said, okay. So first thing which I did is, of course, I had already planned like only 4 or 5 conferences. So I stopped approaching any new ones. I was like, okay, let's because I have already passed, committed to them. So I was like, okay, I'll finish these conferences and then I will take a break. And even my employer was, or even my manager was like really supportive, even my team. So I went to them and said, hey, I got this news and I want to actually take some time off to process this. And then I decided to take a break. We went for a vacation in Amsterdam with family. So I went to vacation with family in Amsterdam for 2 weeks and then came back. And by the time I also got my report. So the good news was it was not type 1, which my doctors suspected, because my blood sugar was 270, which is too high, which is like type 1. And then when my report came back, by the time I was back from Amsterdam, they said, no, it's type 2. So you don't have to live on insulin. So I was a little bit relaxed that I don't need to take insulin anymore. And then there were a few questions which actually...
So just for those who don't know, what's the difference between type 1 and type 2?
Yeah. So if you have type 1, you have to take insulin, right? So it's not like something which is optional. You have to take insulin to manage your blood sugar level. With type 2, you can manage it. You can actually still exercise and stop eating sugar. And then you can easily manage your diabetes, right? You don't have to take insulin anymore. And of course, there is only one tablet, which I take, metformin, which I take twice a day. That's the only thing which is needed. So it's like no insulin. So I was pretty much relaxed. And then there were a few questions which my doctor asked, like, what is your job? So I said, okay, I'm a software engineer. So she said, like, do you do any sports? And I was like, what sports? And she was like, do you move enough? I was like, no, I don't think so. And then I realized, okay, this is not right. I mean, I'm not young anymore. I mean, I know in my 20s, I could work for 4 days in a stretch and then I can still easily spend another day doing something else. But that's not the case anymore. We are all getting old. So I gave a thought, like, what I want to do now. So I stopped. First thing was, of course, stop sugar. So I was, it's not like I was very addicted to sugar. So I was like, okay, let's stop it. And then it's been now close to how many? 18 or 20 months. I haven't eaten sugar, like processed sugar anymore. I just use like fruits. Even those fruits are like, which is approved by my doctor, like berries and some fruits, papaya, watermelon. So I just use those fruits and nothing else. So it's 20 months, no sugar. And then I started running. So I got like, okay, my doctor asked me to walk, basically. So she said, like, try to walk 5 kilometers, not daily. She didn't say daily. She said, like, 5 kilometers is enough. And then I started walking. And it was boring, to be frank. I mean, walking is boring. So then I started.
You think so?
Yeah. Okay. I don't.
So everyone has different experiences with walking.
So then I started. I tried running, and then of course these. At the start, it was hard. So because I gave up in like not even a kilometer, right? So I couldn't even run a kilometer, and then as I was like, I found walking very boring. I was like, this is the only option. So I started like running, walking, and then at some point of time, I was like, oh, I'm able to do 5 kilometers. Let's do 10 kilometers. And then I started doing 10 kilometers. And then I was like, okay, why not to do half marathons? So I set this goal for, in 2024, I set this goal that I want to do half marathons. So I ended up doing this 4 half marathons this year. And
wow.
Very active. I lost like 12, 13 kgs.
Wow.
In 20 months. I mean, now my weight is very constant, like between 61, 62 kgs. Mm-hmm. So it's been like the same for like maybe since the start of this year. So feel active. I can manage my sleep, like 8 hours of sleep, and then feel very active for the rest of the day. And of course, no travel, right? So that was one of the things that I said, okay, this year I will not travel anywhere, no conferences, nothing else. I'll just focus on the health and try to travel more with family. So we did some vacations across Europe and US. And so that's it. I just want to be healthy.
It's so incredible what is solvable, like what is curable with just a little bit better diet and with a little bit more of movement, right? So when you learned about that was part of a regular health checkup. Were there like warning signs before? Like even in retrospect, would you say, I experienced something, I should have listened better to my body?
I did. I mean, it was actually probably going for more than a year. So I remember, like, whenever I used to eat, I used to just like literally pass out. Like, I used to sleep. I need to sleep whenever I used to eat anything. Then long sleeps. I mean, even I used to like sleep for 10 hours, 12 hours. I used to still feel like sleepy, and that was, of course, the sign that okay, there is something wrong. I used to just blame it on weather. Maybe I ate something else. So I was just ignoring it. So I will recommend, like, if there is something wrong, just go to the doctor. Don't blame it on something else. There might be something which is wrong actually in your body.
And that doesn't have to be diabetes. That can basically be anything, right?
Anything.
Blood pressure, that can even impact mental health and something like that.
Exactly.
So it's very important to have those warning signs checked regularly, if you have. And what do you think the biggest intervention that you took, like, was it walking, was it diet? What did do the biggest impact?
Going for runs. So running actually helped me a lot because, you know, it's actually also very healthy for your mental health when you go for, I mean, generally when I go for a run, it's like I go for like 5 kilometers or 10 kilometers, I run. My mind is like empty. I'm not thinking about anything else. I'm just focusing on empty roads and running, come back home, relaxed. So it actually gave me a lot of clarity as well, you know, which helped me eventually when I wanted to apply for my promotion. Because before this, right, of course, when I was going through this diabetes, I was always dual-minded. Like, I was always used to think, am I good enough? Am I a good developer? I always used to ask this question to myself, am I doing like a great job at work or not? So always had these doubts. When I started, like, of course, doing, I started running, and then, of course, started like not eating sugar anymore. Of course, that was required. But I think running changed that. And then I started having more confidence in myself. I remember like when I applied for this year, I applied for promotion. Once I was back, I was fit, maybe mentally fit enough to believe in myself. And then, of course, I went through the promotion. I got promoted. So now at job, like, of course, I have clear goals. I know like what I need to do rather than like juggling between 10 things and not doing anything else. So it helps a lot, like mentally as well as, of course, physically as well.
Okay, and what do you think, like, how, what did motivate you? I mean, of course, you had this diagnosis, but like, we are obviously built different because I hate running, I love walking. but anyhow, I think the biggest thing is you need to find something that you like. It could be walking, it could be running, it could be like road cycling or whatever. But even then, you don't know what you like when you start, if you have a history of non-movement. So what did you do to like stay on track with that?
Oh, I think I just wanted to live healthy. I think that was the whole motivation, that no, I don't want to go back to that time where I was sleeping for 12, 14 hours a day. Because, you know, the days were so small for me because I was mostly sleeping. And then when I figured this out, like, okay, now I can sleep for 8 hours. Suddenly I had like, believe me, I mean, I had like one whole day in a week. And there was a time I was like, what? Oh my God, I have so much time. What should I do now? Mm-hmm. And then I realized, fixing this schedule, fixing my health actually gave me a lot of time which I can, of course, spend somewhere else, like not at work, basically not at conferences, but yeah, with the family, right? I mean, we can travel easily. Like, of course, I have more time now. I feel more energy, so I can give more time to something which matters a lot to me. That helped. I think that was the only motivation. And now whenever I see when I see my old photos, I'm like, who's this guy?
Yeah, you changed a lot, like undeniably.
Yeah, so it's surprising. I mean, of course, it feels good as well, right? When you see, you look different, you look more healthy. So apart from, of course, being very active and being healthy, I think the other thing which I like about being healthy is now clothes. I can buy amazing clothes, you know. I don't know. I mean, it looks good as well. It's like,
yeah, it definitely does. Love it. So do you use any like trackers or like outside of the regular job that your doctor do? Do you like Whoop or calorie trackers or something of that sort?
Yeah. So when I started running, the first thing which I did was buy a Garmin watch because I was looking for some watch, right, which is which I can use for tracking my runs and everything. So of course, invest in a good watch, like for and Garmin is one of the best, I think, when it comes to sports. And so I did that. Even for my wife also, I bought another Garmin because she started running as well. She did at like 5 kilometers recently, and she was like screaming, "Wow. Oh, I did it. I was like, yes, all the best. So because she also lost like almost, because after seeing me, she also stopped eating sugar, and she also lost like 12 to 14 kgs in past year or so. And now she also started running. So we'll probably do another, we are planning to do 10 kilometers next year together. So let's see. But yeah, invest in a good tracking watch. I mean, sports watch. Garmin is amazing. I've heard good things about other watches as well. Whatever you can find, right? I mean, and then apart from that, to track my blood sugar, I just test it daily before I eat anything, empty stomach. Just try to see like how much it is. For past 18 months, it's been like below the average, because my doctor said 130 is okay for me. I mean, as I'm diabetes type 2, so 130 is fine. It shouldn't be. Generally, it's 100,
right? Shouldn't be higher. Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's less than 130, so I'm all good.
Yeah, it's so interesting how a lot of health issues, I mean, in your case, it's obvious because it's diabetes, but a lot of other health issues come back to like sugar intake. And if you start taking care of that, like you start to realize where sugar is in, like every product has sugar in it. If it's like made for immediate consumption, if you buy it ready from the shelf, chances are that's a sugar bomb, right? Did you expect that?
I started looking at after I got diabetes, right? I never looked at before. And whenever I try to buy something, I'd see the sugar content. And I'm like, wow, what the hell? I was eating this. And this has so much sugar. So
incredible.
It's surprising. Like, I don't know, like who. And I think the society has accepted that sugar is good for health. I'm not sure why. Because even especially if you go to countries like India, right? I mean, sugar is like part of everything, and they will be like, why? It's okay, you can eat sugar, like what's happening, what's wrong with this? Yeah. And I think after getting diabetes and after like fixing my health so far, I think that sugar is the cheapest drugs you can buy, and it's available for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Wasn't there a study that compared brain imagery between sugar and cocaine or something like that?
If that exists and still not like talked enough, maybe like, you know, this all big industries, they have a lot of money to throw around. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the end, sugar is cheap. Sugar is acts as a preservative, and it increases like the perceived value of food, but it's still cheap to manufacture. So there we have our reason, right? But it's actually very hard to overcome, like even the slightest form of sugar addiction. At least that was the case for me. How did you manage that?
I just gave up. I was like, okay, I don't want to eat sugar anymore. And I think this is one thing which I can do. If I have like focused something in my life that I want to do this, I will do it. It's not like something which I will, because a lot of people do ask me this question. You know? For me, it's very hard not to eat sugar. How you do it? I was like, I just stop. I don't care. I mean, because health is important for me than anything else.
So you have to have your motivation right.
Exactly.
Very interesting. Thank you for being so open about these topics. That was a lot of information, a lot of value, I guess. Thank you so much. So if people now want to reach out to you, or maybe want to start like contributing to open source as well, what would be a good way to reach out?
Very active on X, Blue Sky, as well as LinkedIn. So you can find me everywhere using handle Santosh Yadav Dev. Mm-hmm. And even for open source contribution, I had written a very detailed guide, I would say. how to contribute to Mythos.
Where can people get that?
It's available on my website, santoshadev.dev. So you can, I'll share the link as well, so you can probably add it.
Yeah, we put the link down in the show notes.
Yeah, so that's also a good way to start, because I when I was writing that blog, actually I interviewed many people from the industry who have been contributing to different projects. For example, Playwright, some people from security, even someone from GitHub research team, GitHub security team reached out and they also contributed to this talk or to this detailed guide. So there are interviews from people who actually did it and then they succeeded in the industry. So if you're looking for some resource, I think just go through it and DM me. I mean, we can work something out. It's not like you have to only contribute to the code. That's not the only way to contribute to an open source project. There are multiple ways and we can always talk about it.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much for that conversation, Santosh.
Thank you for the invitation. It was fun to talk to you.
It was. Thank you.